Blog Talk Radio.
April 11th, 2013, and as always, I am the man they call Crossbar, K. Ross Reed. Joining me across the lovely desk, Mr. Adam O. Wells. Adam, how you doing today?
Fantastic. How about yourself?
Can't complain. Awesome. Can't complain. Eight games left to go in the NHL's regular season. The playoff picture is shaping up. I think we've got a very good episode in store for tonight.
Let's see what the let's see what happens. I think so too, but I left all my notes at home, so
preparedness.
I'm Googling blind.
That's it. The Boy Scout among us, always prepared. Tonight we are going to talk about Crosby versus Ovechkin for the Hart Trophy. Are we actually taking a flashback to 2008? We're going to talk about some key injuries to superstars at a very inopportune time, with just that small handful of games left to go. We're going to pick our dream playoff scenarios. We are going to make some dark horse picks, the teams we believe may have a shot from the bottom half of the standings at making their way through or deep into the NHL playoffs. But we got a lot ahead of us, so this week, as always, you are about to go off the crossbar. Well, as I mentioned, four very juicy topics to dig into today, but some very interesting news coming from the National Hockey League just this afternoon, as the NHL, NHLPA, and You Can Play Project announcing the launch of their initiative, which is being touted as the most comprehensive initiative by any major league sport on the issue of the LGBT community and how they relate to sports, and basically making sure that the door stays open, making sure that hockey remains a wide open community and takes an active stance in making all of its participants, be they players, coaches, or fans, as welcome and as comfortable within the game as possible.
For those who are unclear, LGBT refers to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, correct?
That is correct.
All right.
Are there people still unclear about that?
I think there are some people who aren't very clear on acronyms and initialism sometimes.
Turn off the show. Go do some Googling. Get yourself up to date with the 21st century.
But it is definitely a very cool initiative. I mean, you know, people from all shapes and sizes and sexual preferences love to play hockey and any other sport for that matter. So, I mean, it just makes sense to, you know, make them feel welcome, right? I mean, it's not as much of a – it's not a taboo anymore. It's not something that is, you know, frowned upon by people. It's just – if that's what you are, that's what you are. And, you know,
well, that's
live
it.
And love. And
be and
happy.
I mean, let's be honest. We will, as always, call a spade a spade. Major league sports and grassroots league sports in general, tend to be one of those grounds where people can feel a little bit uncomfortable. The nature of competition really does draw out the willingness of some people to take advantage of differences and to make inappropriate comments. But we've seen that in just about every facet of humanity. If you're different in any way, that sort of jumps out a little bit in sports, but it's nice to see this initiative coming into play at the hands of Patrick Burke, who is the president of the You Can Play initiative and a pro talent scout for the Philadelphia Flyers. Also happens to be son of Brian Burke and brother of the late Brendan Burke, who was one of the first people of any major in any major spotlight to come out of the closet and make the announcement. He was, of course, manager for his collegiate hockey team, and being the son of Brian Burke, had a fair share of spotlight upon him. So, really nice to see, again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the program will actually focus on education, counseling, and training for National Hockey League players. A lot of that being worked into the sort of boot camp, if you will, that the rookies go through as they enter the league. There's a lot of coaching that goes on for these young men as they enter the ranks of the professionals. And they're often coached on things such as how to interact with the media, ways to handle their travel locations, things like that. And a lot of it being focused on the league's tolerance policies for any number of infractions. And this is simply another framework within which they will start to educate the players and basically draw the lines.
Now, the NHL is the one that's really taking the leap forward and getting out into the forefront of this movement and initiative. But I think this should have a ripple effect through the rest of professional sports as well, MLB, NBA, and NFL, right? I mean, there was an NFL player a while back who was quite vocal about speaking up against someone who had made an ignorant comment in a public forum.
You're right. No, it was, Chris Clue of the Minnesota Vikings, kicker for the Vikings, actually responded to a Maryland area representative, an elected official, who I will not give any publicity on my program, who essentially wrote a letter to the Baltimore Ravens organization asking that specific players keep quiet with their opinions on the legalization of gay marriage. And Chris Clue took it upon himself to write a hilarious and very poignant, very well thought out, and very well written letter to Deadspin.com, in which he essentially embarrassed this particular representative and called him out for the small-minded bigotry that he was so willing to portray. And, of course, Brandon Iambadejo of the Baltimore Ravens, linebacker, came out, again, very quick to support. We really hope to see more and more of that trickle-down effect. I think what we saw today in the media as a response to the You Can Play project was a very overwhelming crash of support for the NHL. Names like Ellen DeGeneres officially coming out as a hockey fan. And just a lot of just sort of positive buzz about this. Nobody saying a bad thing. I saw an interview today with NHLPA executive Donald Fehr, where he said that even in private meetings, not a single player within the Players Association had any point of contention with the NHL moving forward with this initiative. Now, that would be, I think, somewhat ambitious to say that there is not a single player in the National Hockey League who doesn't hold these views. But the fact that we are moving into a place where the Players Association, the owners, the governors, the league itself, right through to the fans in the stands are beginning to embrace this idea as hockey being the most welcoming of the major pro sports. Yep. And that's something I think we can all take pride in the hockey community.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
It's a huge step forward, and it's a great cause to support. So, I mean, you know, we'll watch it closely in the future. And
Yeah, I look forward to seeing how this develops. I look forward to seeing the trickle-down effect, as you mentioned, through other sports.
Yeah.
I'm really anxious to see what organizations within Major League Sports are going to be the next to react. Where will the next domino fall? I think this was a huge step forward, and we will follow it with great interest.
Indeed.
All right, so moving along to a little bit more ice-oriented hockey talk, Alex Ovechkin.
Who?
Can you believe this guy?
He's having a bit of a streak.
17 goals, 24 points in his last 15 games. A tear for the Washington Capitals, which has seen them post an 11-3-1 record during that time span.
Yeah, Ovechkin is all of a sudden tied with Stamkos for most goals in the league at 26, out of nowhere.
Fantastic.
Yep.
So now the Capitals currently sit at 21-17-2 on the season, atop the Southeast Division, and holding on to a playoff spot, not something we thought we'd see just a few weeks ago.
Yep, that was, and I mean, a lot of that is just due to Ovechkin getting on this tear, right? I mean, they brought in Erat, right?
Yep.
Immediately injured, bad thing. But Ovechkin, you know, had already started this tear and, you know, going on quite well.
Well, and that's what's so interesting about it, is it really has been Alex Ovechkin leading the charge for the Washington Capitals. Not just riding the coattails of team success, and not just him experiencing one of those hot streaks he's become notorious for, but realistically, he's carrying this team into the playoffs on his back.
Yeah.
When not 4 weeks ago, you and I were sitting here discussing whether or not he belonged in the top five left wingers in the league.
Yep.
And now we're talking...
Well, it's because he's a regular listener and he wanted to prove us, you know, prove
us wrong.
We're
huge in Russia.
Yeah, the Russian community loves
it.
So
that is true. So now the real question becomes, for me, does Ovechkin surpass Sidney Crosby for the Hart Trophy? Because he's been able to put his team on his back and lead this 11-3-1 charge that he's essentially gotten his team into the playoffs right now. But Crosby.
Do we have a time frame on Crosby?
Crosby will not be back for the regular season. That's not an official word, but when you have a long history of concussions, you are the most valuable entity in the National Hockey League, and a slap shot hits your face and cracks your jaw in half and removes more teeth than you can count. He didn't know how many he'd lost in the interview. I would assume it's safe to say he would be gone through the first round of the playoffs anyway. He wasn't eating solid food as of 3 days ago.
As of, with 8 games to go, Ovechkin's only 12 points behind Sidney. And
at his pace, he could pass him in the scoring race. He really could.
And as far as just being an MVP, I mean, Jesus, if he can bring them from relative obscurity up into playoff contention and then go on a run with them, unless somebody else does something truly epic, ali Yaroslav Halak a couple of years ago in the playoffs and carries a team on his back, you know, I think that there would be very good good cause for him to be in the nominees at least.
Yeah, I think at this point, I think it's very much a tale of two Ovechkins so far this season. I think it's going to be a matter of whether or not his momentum carries the Washington Capitals into the postseason. Because at this point, I think it's becoming more and more obvious as time passes that only one representative from the Southeast will be making it to the dance this year.
What else is new?
And the question becomes, does Ovi carrying his team into the playoffs outweigh Crosby's 56 points in 36 games? Because I know that the Penguins are still very good, 8-2-0 in their last 10, but we've seen them absolutely lose a step since Crosby's been gone. And that's even with the additions of Iginla, Morrow.
Of course. I mean, if you're going to lose the top player on the planet, it's going to affect you no matter how many other good players you have behind him. You know, it's still going to be a big
exactly.
noticeable gap in your lineup.
Oh, and, exactly.
But hey, still managed to be 8-2-0 in their last 10 with, 8 games to go. I mean...
Oh, I don't think Pittsburgh's in any trouble. Obviously, they
no
clinched a playoff spot.
But
the question is, when you see the Penguins fall off without Crosby, does that speak to his value more than watching the Washington Capitals surge with Alex Ovechkin's contributions? Who is more valuable to their team?
At this point in time, Ovechkin is definitely more valuable to his team. Yes, there's been a slight dip in Pittsburgh's production, but again, 8-2-0 in their last 10.
Sure, very good.
And, you know, Washington is 8-1-1 in their last 10, due largely in part to Ovechkin being there and being on fire.
Oh, absolutely.
Pittsburgh's used to making do without Crosby. He played, 11 games in 2 years or 21 games in 2 years?
Yeah, I think it was 21. Yeah.
So Pittsburgh is more than capable of saying, yeah, no, we love you, Sid, but don't worry, we got this until you're ready to come back.
But the fact that they played without him does not mean that they played well without him.
No, but they didn't.
They were
okay. Horribly.
They were okay. They
right.
were better than
the
Capitals
team without
would
their
be.
Superstar.
They would be, they had some superstars. They did have a guy who won the scoring title and the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, yeah, all right. So
I guess when I look at this and it really breaks down, I think what we're seeing is an Ovechkin who's been given the reins. I think Adam Oates has finally figured out how to let Ovechkin go without losing control of him. I saw a very interesting breakdown. I forget which program I was watching. I watch a lot of hockey on TV, where the commentator was essentially breaking down the fact that Ovechkin is now cutting to the center of the ice at the red line, as opposed to 8 feet inside the blue line. He's starting to make his move early, and when defensemen are cheating to beat him on the board, since that's where he initially was going before cutting back in, all of a sudden, he's giving them that half step of just pause and think, how do I react? And when a guy is as explosive as Alex Ovechkin is, it really becomes that issue. Do you step up? Do you fall back? And if you don't decide quickly and decide correctly, you're dead in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he'll capitalize on that every time. So, Shazam.
So, the question becomes, do you have Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, or one of the three other potential candidates who I've got listed as Patrick Kane, John Tavares, and Steven Stamkos? That tend to be the consensus pick for the Hart Trophy this year. There's some talk about Ryan Getzlaf. When the Hurricanes were in a playoff position, there was talk of Eric Staal. Obviously, they've fallen back now. Who do you give the Hart to?
If they continue, I mean, I've got to say Ovechkin. If he can continue on this tear and they go deep, because, I mean, ultimately it usually goes to, you know, the cup-winning team, does it not? I mean, you know.
The Hart Trophy?
Yeah. Well, no. It's someone who goes deep in the playoffs.
No, not yeah. Never.
We've had this discussion.
Nope, doesn't happen.
You told me I was wrong last year for saying it doesn't.
No, I said you have to make the playoffs.
Oh. Okay.
You do. And in my opinion, that's what eliminates a guy like Steven Stamkos. Much like it eliminated him from contention last year. If you don't make the playoffs, how valuable could you have been to your team? Your team didn't go anywhere.
Okay, well, in this case, then definitely Ovechkin. They weren't going to make the playoffs. Ovechkin won a tear. They're going to make the playoffs.
Okay, I like that. I mean, it's a great point. I think, in my opinion, two things need to happen if Alex Ovechkin is going to be a winner for the Hart. I think if one of the two happens, he's a contender. He's one of the finalists. And I think those two things are Ovechkin will have to pass Sidney Crosby in the points race, which will require, as you mentioned, 12 points in the final 8 games of the regular season. And Washington will have to get into the playoffs. If they do both of those things, Ovechkin wins the Hart. If they do one of those things, i.e. just make the playoffs, and he doesn't surpass him, maybe he gets it over Crosby. If he passes him in points and they don't make the playoffs, forget it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, so right now we just have to keep our eyes on Winnipeg because they're the only ones who are really close enough to be able to take Washington out of first place in the Southeast Division.
Absolutely.
Nobody else is getting in, well, unless some form of...
Mathematically, it's possible, but, yeah,
but yeah, highly unlikely.
It's not going to happen. And I mean,
it's going to be a Northeast heavy West or Eastern Conference. I mean,
and I think when you look at it, I think that Crosby and Ovechkin become the finalists by default. I think when you look at the other guys who are in that conversation, Patrick Kane is absolutely having a spectacular season this year. 46 points in 39 games. But how critical is he to his team's success? That is a damn good team. I think that I don't want it to happen, but if you see Patrick Kane go down for any length of time during the season, I think the Chicago Blackhawks are just fine. They make the playoffs. They do exceptionally well because of how deep they are. They've got Hossa. They've got Taves. They've got, essentially, a very stacked team without Kane. And they do just fine. And he's not having a Crosby-like year. And that is the difference. I think, like you said, you remove Crosby from the Penguins' picture. They're still a very good, deep team. They're still a playoff team. But Crosby's got a lot more points. And a lot more points per game than Patrick Kane. I think you take Tavares out of the question because although he is blossoming as an offensive superstar and does have his team in the playoff picture, he's not defensive enough. He's a one-sided player.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be a one-sided player, you need to be dominant, a la Steven Stamkos, except that Stamkos does not have his team in the playoffs. I think all these guys have one strike against them with the exception of Crosby and Ovechkin. If Ovi gets the Washington Capitals to the postseason, I think the Hart is his to lose.
So we're back to 2009.
We are back to 2009.
Groovy. All right.
And speaking of Sidney Crosby,
okay.
Injuries to star players.
Oh, God.
There have been a lot of players gone down in just the past 8 days. I think we're finally starting to see the effects of the lockout shortened season, a lot of wear and tear that has accumulated into significant injury. And strangely enough, it appears that the teams who made the most significant moves at the deadline have been hardest hit. I mean, when you look at the product that is on the ice right now versus the product that was on the ice 2 weeks ago, you essentially have Pittsburgh losing Sidney Crosby and James Neal, but gaining Jerome Iginla and Brandon Morrow. Those are two very good players to add,
But it's not exactly a push.
Yet the Penguins are a worse team than they were 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Boston lost Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, both to concussion.
Oh, Marchand.
After adding Jaromir Jagr and Wade Redden, two players who were critical pieces, great little deadline additions to a team that was ready to contend, and yet they are a worse team than they were 2 weeks ago.
On that note, on the Boston note, Volchenkov got a 4-game suspension for elbowing Brad Marchand on the head.
I saw that.
Best 4 games he will ever spend off.
Look, I don't like Brad Marchand. I don't want to see a suspendable offense knock any player
out. No, nor do I. But if someone had it coming, without being Rafi Torres, maybe, because he'll be fine. You know, like
yeah,
a little
that's
punk.
True. I'd like to see, I would put Marchand at the top of my list for guys I dislike, guys who I would like to see get crunched by a clean hit.
Yeah, you don't want to see
Rafi Torres is number 2 and Matt Cook is the number 3. I don't care if you're reformed. You were a dirt ball. The fact that you've missed very few games in your career due to concussion is a joke. Minnesota loses Danny Heatley to arthroscopic and season-ending arthroscopic shoulder surgery. Difficult to say. Easier to say is they picked up Jason Pominville at the deadline and again appeared to be stacked, but are now a worse team than they were 2 weeks ago.
Hey, you've got teams. Nashville right now is 5 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And they are missing Gabriel Bork, Paul Gostad, and Mike Fisher.
Not good.
No, not good at all. I mean, these are all useful cogs in that machine. And especially when you're fighting for to get into the playoffs, 5 points out, that's a big downer.
Yeah, you have to assume that that's going to be the end of the line
for the
Nashville Predators. But the good news is, for feeble, disgruntled, and aging Marty Erat, they were able to pull off the heist of the trade deadline. Now, we missed last week's episode. How in the name of God do you give up Philip Forsberg, who was as high as a number 2 consensus draft pick at points during the season last year? I mean, guys had him literally challenging Nail Yakupov for the number 1 spot for a good chunk of the year. A absolute cannot miss NHL caliber prospect for Marty Erat.
They want the right now. They figure he'd bring in some form of magic to get Ovechkin's spark. I don't know. But
unbelievable.
Yeah, no, that was kind of a stupid, stupid move.
And how about David?
And then he immediately got hurt.
And how about David Poile in Nashville? Marty Erat comes out, calls out the team. He's disgruntled, says he doesn't want to be there. And so they turn him into a top 5 draft pick. That's incredible. What?
Yep.
Are you kidding?
Nuts.
I mean, you talk about mortgaging the future. You just mortgaged your house for a cheeseburger. Like, this is incredible.
The cheeseburger that is now giving you indigestion and you're out for a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so do you then place the Nashville Predators as the hardest hit team? You think that they've suffered the most substantial loss due to this injury bug?
I'd say they got to be up there, man. I mean, Colorado's missing a couple of important guys at this point, too, I believe. But,
they were
talking about relevancy, then they're
Yeah, they're off. They're just off planning a Vegas trip.
Yeah. still, Ottawa is still hard hit.
Ottawa is very hard hit. But, again, that's been long term.
Yeah.
I mean, when we're talking about this rash of bugs recently and the effect that it's had, I think we're starting to see Ottawa's injuries bug catch up to them.
Yeah.
They've not played good, dropping 5 straight games in regulation.
Jesus.
For a team that was really pulling miracles out of their back end for the most part of the season to stay in that playoff hunt.
And they're in a 3-way tie right now at 44 points. So, I mean, they've got a...
Yeah, they're not safe by any means.
They need to pull the proverbial rabbit and get going. I mean, it's tough for them.
Pull the rabbit out of the mustache. Love that mustache. You know what? I'm going to have to take a look at Boston and say that I think that Pittsburgh has suffered the most substantial losses. Obviously, you lose a Hart Trophy candidate and you lose a 40-goal scorer from a year ago in Sidney Crosby and James Neal. But you do add Iginla and Morrow. That softens the blow a little bit.
Yeah.
You have Malkin, who, as we've seen, plays his best hockey, sans Sid. So you've got a very good team. You've got Letang coming back from injury. Boston's got to be. I mean, you bring in Jágr to fix the power play. Presumably, Redden does the same. He's a great number two power play point man. Number three, because Hamilton will be out there with Chara at all times. Redden quarterbacking the number two unit. But that loss of Patrice Bergeron, who is one of the best defensive forwards in the game, one of the best face-off men in the game, which is a highly underrated skill in the National Hockey League, simply starting with the puck is an incredible advantage that many people do not weight near heavily enough. And losing Brad Marchand, I mean, I hate Brad Marchand,
but he's an effective
on the
ice. Turd.
It's exactly that's.
Yeah.
There's a reason he draws the ire of people who watch him play against their team, and it's because he's a dirtball and he plays outside the rules, but he's effective. And when you talk about does he enhance your team's chances of winning, yeah. Would I pay him money or give him the time of day to play on my team? No, not in a million years. I don't like the way the guy plays. I don't respect the way the guy plays. But you have to at least recognize the fact that he is a very effective player. And he is.
Honestly, I think if you look at it, you go back a ways, Philly has suffered more than anybody probably.
Yeah, they're going back far.
They're not sniffing much of a playoff. And now though, they've also got Danny Breer, who's recently been out, Zach Rinaldo, Max Talbot. Also, you know, toss in Chris Pronger, who's been out forever. Braden Coburn, Andre Mazaros, Nicholas Grossman.
Plus, they've been suffering from Holmgren's mental deficiencies for years.
Yeah,
years.
Philly, they never really had a chance.
I think it was Michael Farber on the trade deadline posted two standing headlines: Pope prays for peace, and Philadelphia searches for goaltending. How do you like the move of shipping out Sergei Bobrovsky to Columbus, having him become a Vezina candidate? You're signed on for the next 45 years with Ilya Bryzgalov. So you bring in the backup from Columbus, who has been, let's say, up and down since his rookie season, where he posted an incredible 10 shutouts in Steve Mason. He plays one period of hockey, and you give him a contract extension. Who is making these? Is Ray Shiro of the Pittsburgh Penguins making the decisions on behalf of the Philadelphia Flyers? Is this...
At this point, it could be. Or maybe they got stuck in some kind of bring your kids to work thing, and they figured, well, let's roll with it, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I tell you, looking at some of these moves, Holmgren he's got a crack in his Liberty Bell. There's something going on there that is just unbelievable. I really hope that Steve Mason does well. I think he had a lot of potential. He was an exciting goaltender to watch in his rookie season. But if you can't handle the reins in Columbus, given two or three seasons, I don't know how long they gave him. They gave him a few years to develop and to give him the opportunity to become what they thought he could be. Now you're going to step into Philadelphia, where they crucify goaltenders on a regular basis. I mean, you'd be better off just stepping in front of the firing range. They have no defense. They have no consistency in their organization. And they're a notorious goalie graveyard. Why?
Where goalies go to die, man.
Why? You got to admire the gonads on the kid to even sign the extension. Because you know they're going to buy out Bryzgalov this summer. They have to.
Yeah, they got it.
I mean, it's going to cost them $30 million to pay him to go away.
There's a lot of...
And then he's going to be a free agent, and he'll probably sign in Toronto.
And then play amazingly.
Or be the perfect veteran complement to Reimer, who is playing amazing.
Yeah.
And they may just need a fantastic backup to sit on the bench and drink tea and, you know, watch for Bears.
Okay. Speaking of contract extensions, the Habs have re-upped Budaj for another 2 years, which I think is great news.
Love it.
He's a solid backup. He's
6-1 record as a backup this year. You cannot go wrong with a guy who, as we've discussed on numerous occasions, I still can't believe didn't get a crack at being a number one somewhere.
Yeah.
He had a good, solid full season in Colorado. Then he had some not-so-great times. But Steve Mason just signed an extension with the Philadelphia Flyers. Peter Budaj could have been, in my opinion, had number one potential.
Yep. And, you know, he still does. He still shows flashes of it anyway. You know, maybe given a long-term shot at it, maybe not. But hopefully we'll never have to know because, you know, Price will stay healthy and Budaj will just come in and be solid every time he gets called upon. I mean,
nothing wrong with that extension.
Speaking of Montreal, though, they've also been hit with the injury bug. I mean, we've got three or four players that are injured long-term from the defensive core: Rafael Diaz, Yannick Weber, and now Alexi Emelin is out for the rest of the season with a torn ligament in his knee.
And if there's one thing, if there's one position that the Canadiens could not afford to lose, it was that Russian freight train.
Yep.
It's that ability to throw that hit at the blue line, that ability to step up, and that propensity to just drive players to the other side of the ice. He's one of the few remaining players left in the league who throws that big, pounding body check, but still has enough foot speed to get around the ice very well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know that myself in particular, I've been singing the praises of Alexi Emelin for 2 seasons now. I think I wanted to give him the Calder last year at one point. He's an effective guy, and a guy who spent the right amount of time seasoning his game in the Russian leagues. The perfect example of the late blooming defenseman.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the Canadiens are going to do to replace that. They brought in Bolia, who has played well, but does not bring that role. I mean, you look at the system, Tenorti has the size, but they brought him up for a cup of coffee right after the Emelin injury. He didn't quite look ready. He didn't quite look up to speed with the NHL game. And I don't know if that's a matter of nerves, if that's a matter of simply becoming accustomed to the speed, because he's had some good, solid stats in Hamilton. He's been a very good defenseman for them. But is he ready? It's a tough call. Like, this is a devastating blow.
And, it'd be kind of cool if they had another kind of Subban situation where, oh, right in time for the playoffs, somebody gets injured, I'll bring up this young kid, and then shazam, amazing.
It would be great. It really would be. But something that, a depth move that, Marc-Andre Bergevin made was bringing in Drewitzky right before the deadline.
Yep.
And here's a kid who didn't get hardly any ice time during the Kings' run last year. Got his name on the cup by petition, I think, for having not played enough minutes. But is a legitimate, young, big, strong NHL defenseman. I'm not sure his age. I want to say he's 23 or 24. The Google monkey is climbing the Google tree right now. We'll see.
He's 28, actually. Born 1984. Yep.
Oh, man, he's old like us.
No.
Damn.
Yeah.
All right, then.
I remember 28.
But anyway, a big, solid kid, NHL experience. He's a puck mover. At times, he's a penalty killer. At times, he throws the body. At times, he's a very versatile depth. When you talk about a depth defenseman, you talk about the guys that NHL clubs need to stockpile. He's that kind of a player.
Yep.
So good, solid move. It would have been
hopefully
nice.
Hopefully it'll be enough.
Yeah, it would have been nice to know that Emelin was going to go down, but that's the nature of the game.
Of course.
And when you look at the teams in our division, Toronto's lost Lupo again. Boston has lost Bergeron and Marchand, as we mentioned. Ottawa has lost everybody but Paul McLean's mustache. Emelin is a devastating loss and a key cog in the Montreal wheel right now, but we can overcome.
Speaking of key cogs in the Montreal wheel, Subban and Ryder, 32 points apiece, tied in the top
15. Fantastic. And a lot of people, as of right now, picking P.K. Subban for the Norris Trophy.
You got to give him a chance at that. I mean, Jesus.
You do.
Talk about defensemen being invaluable to their teams. I mean, how far has P.K. come in the last year or two?
And especially given the fact that he, one, did not have a training camp, and two, missed the first 6 games of the season, to be putting up the numbers he's putting up.
He's come in playing like a seasoned, know-what-to-do defenseman. You know, he's making the smart decisions. He's not this impetuous young psycho youth anymore. He's leading the league in defensemen with 32 points.
To be fair, that is because Letang was hurt.
Okay, but fine. He's still ahead of Ryan Suter.
Absolutely. And I think it comes down to those two first names, P.K. Subban and Ryan Suter, for the Norris this year. Letang has missed too many chunks to be considered a candidate and I hate to brand Chris Letang as this, but this year, let's face it, the reason he was running away with the Norris up until this year was because of the one-dimensionality of his game. I'm not saying he can't handle the defensive side of the puck. I'm certainly not saying that at all. But if you're going to miss that many games and still win the Norris, you have to do it by dominating offensively.
Yeah.
And he did not. He was not able to still dominate because of that.
And PK's shooting 10.8%. Yep. I mean, that's, again, that's wicked high for these guys.
It is. The only knock against PK right now is his time on ice. He's not
minutes.
Over that 24, 25, I mean, you look at Super 27.5.
But that's also because of the defensive depth that the Montreal Canadiens have this year. They've got a lot of solid defensemen they can toss out there, and they're making sure PK is rested come playoff time. Because even Markov is at 24. I mean,
I agree, but that does knock against...
As a Norris candidate,
As a coaching decision, that makes a lot of sense. I'm all for it. I would rather see PK Subban as a Montreal Canadiens fan. Play that style.
You're right, but as a Norris candidate, though, you got to end up in the 25, 26, 27.
It does, and that's going to be the only knock, because when you look at, as we said, Letang's upside is his points. Well, PK's got more. Suter's upside is his minutes per game, but PK's got a plus 11 over him. He's plus 12 to Suter's plus 1.
Yep.
And it's not like Minnesota has a poor defensive team. I mean, they brought in Parise because of his two-way game. They've got guys like Mikko Koivu, who are just incredible at both ends of the ice. They've got not much else for defensemen, I'll give them that, but they've got a very strong goaltending situation.
Funny how Chara's not even nipping at this anywhere. He's just having a bad year. I think his age is catching up with him, and he's he's the perennial Norris candidate.
But his numbers have never really been about points. Chara is about putting the fear of God in forwards. And to that extent, he is still quite effective.
That's true, yeah. I don't think I would take him on.
Now, there was a photo of he next to Nathan Gerby on the Hockey Writers today during Boston and Buffalo's last matchup that was hilarious. It looked like it was Bring Your Kid to Work Day. It looked like Gerby should have been skating around like before the opening faceoff with a flag and like high-fiving guys as they came back out. He literally was not up to his armpit.
No. Just as a comparison, though, Chara, who's in 32nd points-wise, he's averaging a little over 24 minutes per game. So, I mean, it's not that much more than BK. That's a couple shifts.
Yeah, but a couple of shifts means a lot, especially when anytime you get up past that 20-point mark, or 22-minute mark. And another thing to consider about that is that Chara has been playing the entire season with a rookie partner. I know that we sing the praises of Dougie Hamilton quite often here on Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com.
Thanks.
But the fact of the matter is, he's a rookie defenseman. He's a big kid with all the potential in the world, can move the puck, sees the ice very well, foot speed, all those things that we've been patting him on the back for since you and I went to go see him play in junior.
But Chara's got to play a little more conservatively to make sure that
if
the puck makes a mistake.
And that's it. And realistically, they're going to give some more power play time, some more penalty killing time, some more critical minutes to your second defensive pairing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that to take into consideration. I agree that Chara is, in my books, out of the running this year. But I don't think I think you will see Chara in full form next year as well. I think Chara will age Lidstrom-like. I don't think he's ever been as good, nor will he ever be as good as Lidstrom. But I think he will maintain his quality of play into his later years and most likely have the opportunity to retire atop his game in his late 30s or early 40s, a la Dick Lidstrom.
Cool. All right.
All right. So since I've already done my shameless plug, and we are sitting at 22 minutes approximately in the program, let's talk about some dream playoff scenarios. 8, maybe 9 games left on the schedule heading into tonight's action, depending on which team you are a follower of. And there are some primo playoff matchups shaping up in both conferences. Who do you want to see? Let's go 2 each. And I've got an asterisk next to mine because I can do that.
Fair enough. I mean, honestly, if the playoffs were to start today, Montreal will be facing Toronto. That'd be wicked to see. 4-5
awesome.
Matchup. I mean, yeah, talk about wicked.
You talk about great for the game, great for everything. And something that you actually brought up earlier off air, just the point that you say you, as a Montreal fan, would be excited to see it, but would be a little nervous.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Jesus, Toronto hasn't been in what, almost a decade?
Exactly.
And they've been pretty good against Montreal recently.
And that's why the series would be so awesome.
Yeah, it would be edge of your seat stuff.
Because it would make you nervous.
Yeah.
Because Toronto is a damn good hockey team this year.
Yep.
Especially if they manage to get Lupo back in time for the playoffs. Lupo? Is it Lupo? Tell me, is it Lupo?
It's always Lupo.
I mean, you look at offensive depth, not a lot of superstars, but a lot of depth, built kind of like the Montreal Canadiens. Defensively, a little bit to be desired on the top end, but nothing to be desired on the bottom end. They're a team full of slightly above average defensemen. No superstars, but not a whole lot of weak points either. I mean, they keep sending Jake Gardner back down, and he's a guy that he's a blue chip prospect that a lot of teams are after.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it could very well be a good series if they match up. Reimer's playing some great hockey. He's no Carey Price. I mean, obviously, advantage Habs between the pipes. I would give slight advantage Montreal on the blue line. And honestly, 51-49, slight advantage Toronto up front.
Yeah? I don't think so. I don't.
It depends on which Kessel and Lupul show up, but...
Still, I don't know, man.
Their top-end talent is more talented than Montreal's top-end talent. They don't have the depth, but if you need to win a playoff series, you need your big guns to fire. And Toronto has better big guns.
I don't know about that.
We don't have a Phil Kessel. For all his soft-spokenness, unwillingness to back-check, blah, 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 blah.
Got a patch already.
He pulls the trigger.
Got a patch already.
Kessel's a better goal scorer. Noof is on a streak. I'll give you that. I'll give him the how she going by. But and he deserves it, deservedly so. But to say that he is on point in this at this point in his career as good as Joffrey Lupul, I give a fraction of an edge to Toronto. And I do it begrudgingly. Trust me, I'm a Montreal fan to the core. And I really firmly would talk smack with any Leafs fan out there toe-to-toe. I think Montreal would win the series. I really do. You got to give the Leafs their due. You got to give Brian Burke his due because this is his team.
Yeah.
This is the work of many a loosened necktie and sweaty forehead. This is pure Brian Burke fingerprints all over this club. Nonis didn't do anything except for bring in Ryan O'Byrne.
Mm.
I mean, that's been his move so far. Who, by the way, scored one of three career goals in his first match as a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Yeah, he's got two goals now.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Another team that I have as one of my – this is where my asterisk comes in because, obviously, I did have Toronto-Montreal as a salivation-inducing matchup. Toronto-Boston. You talk about blue-collar hockey the way you and I remember playoff hockey as
kids.
Yeah,
let's see Colton Orr go up against Lechuch a bunch of times. And just,
Yeah,
that would be a fun, violent series to watch. I would much rather see that because I think Montreal would come out healthier against anybody else.
And they could just beat the bejesus out of each other. And then
whoever comes out
leaves
the retired.
Absolutely. Yep. I like that. But the other matchup that I would be very excited to see, because, again, that was just a little asterisk style of play kind of note, Pittsburgh versus the New York Rangers. The Rangers are very dangerous,
star power.
And Pittsburgh is very vulnerable. I mean, you look at the way that these stats line up, it would appear to be a mismatch. It's a 1-8 seed. But realistically, Crosby's out.
Yeah.
Neal is out. Fleury's been wonky with injuries on
and you've got
Lundqvist
at the other end.
And, yeah, that's it, right? Here's what you see when you look across the ice and you're lining up against the New York Rangers. You've got Brad Richards, who is a playoff stud. I don't care if he's in a slump this season or not. You give that guy the spotlight, he knows how to run with the big dogs. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Nash has been the only bright spot for the Rangers offense this year. He has been unstoppable since coming over. He was intended to be the third head on a three-headed monster for the Rangers offense. It didn't work out that way. They ended up shipping Gaborik out, but that's another reason I like the move. They ended up with the likes of Derek Brassard and Ryan Clough at the trade deadline. What they've been missing all year is what Montreal picked up from them in Brandon Prust.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Rangers team. As you said, Lundqvist is, in my opinion, a better goaltender than Marc-Andre Fleury.
100%.
Stahl may be back in time for the playoffs.
Would be great.
Dan Girardi is underperforming and could very easily step up to become Norris caliber again.
Playoffs MSG. I mean, yeah, that's if there's going to be an arena that'll light you up.
Yep.
You know, Bell Center, ACC, and MSG. I mean, these are all places that
absolutely
will get crowds giving the players that electric shock that they need.
Exactly. And you talk about Pittsburgh being in a very vulnerable position right now. I think this one is primed for the upset, and I think that's what would make this a fantastic series.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to face a John Tortorella team in the first round, no matter what seed they finish in.
I also wouldn't mind seeing the Rangers face Washington. I think that with Ovechkin, with all the momentum he has, it'd just be a great duel to see him go up against Lundqvist over and over again. And
that would be tough, though.
There's not much
else
in Washington.
I think the Rangers would have to climb into the sixth seed for that to happen, right?
Or Washington, yeah. I mean,
Washington couldn't climb.
No.
They're
Washington
not
going to
go any higher.
The only other option there is Washington could actually be out. I mean, if Winnipeg gets those extra win or two over Washington.
Yeah.
And that could also be interesting. See, Winnipeg play, you know, Montreal. Again, this is
Winnipeg
we're talking about dream matchups, right? But Winnipeg
well, we're
versus
just
Montreal,
playing, at least plausible. We'd have to get to the conference finals for that to happen.
Yeah, so let's see that happen. That would be a great conference final.
Let's do that. moving to the West Coast,
west side.
I'll lead off this one.
Yeah, all right.
And I'm going to lead off this little segment by saying that I would like to see a playoff matchup that I was incredibly disappointed with last year. I want the rematch because I expected better. I want to see the Los Angeles Kings play the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
That series fizzled out last year. I wish that I had seen more defense, more crash and bang hockey. You talk about blue collar lunch bucket teams, a lot like the Toronto-Boston matchup that I would like to see. This is a series that would be highly entertaining, despite the fact that it would lack goal scoring.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a battle of, a goaltender battle would be awesome. You know, light up Halak, light up Quick. It's kind of boring to watch a playoff series that goes 1-0, 2-1, stuff like that. But if you've got goaltenders... No, exactly.
I don't mind at all.
That's the thing. If you've got goaltenders who are lighting up, making incredible saves, you know, because these were high-shooting games
that
Quick was involved in and that Halak was involved in, I mean, and Elliott, of course. That would make for some exciting highlight reel stuff. Chicago and Detroit would be, like, that's where they'd start right now, and I'd like to see that, too. I think
that's
going to make for an exciting series.
Well, you're going to make short work of my second matchup, then, because that's exactly what I had with Chicago-Detroit. Like, you get those original six matchups, you get back to the days of Bobby Orr and, Bobby Hull, Gordie Howe, and this is as good as it gets, because as good as the Blackhawks have been, is Detroit ever really an upset when they win a playoff series? I mean, I know that you're missing essentially the greatest defenseman on earth being on the ice for half the game and his defense partner in Brad Stewart walking out the door to San Jose. But you've still got the ability to put Pavel Datsyuk, Henrik Zetterberg on the same line.
Yeah.
You've still got Valtteri Filppula. You've still got Jimmy Howard, who is very close to a six-year extension announced today. The defense is hurting, but they're well-coached, they're highly talented, and experience means a lot in the playoffs.
And they've been there and done that a bunch of times.
Haven't missed the playoffs in two decades.
Incredible.
It would be very sad to see them drop out. I think Chicago would ultimately win that series, but I think that's a series that would be an awful lot closer than you think.
Yeah. And then Vancouver-San Jose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for fun, you know, play up and down the
Sharky.
Coast. Yeah, I mean... I want to see San Jose lose again, and I want to see it happen in seven games, though. And I think Vancouver's the type of team who can sort of string you along, think they're going to do great, then tank a couple games, and then bring up the hope for San Jose's fans, and then fall apart.
That's true.
Yeah.
I would like to see Joe Thornton do something. I really would, because I feel like been a victim. But he doesn't disappear in the playoffs.
No,
That's
he doesn't.
It's
just the team around him.
Joe Thornton has never disappeared.
No.
Ever. He's never gone away in his career. He's not the performer. He's not the Hart Trophy winner he was at one time.
But he's still a solid hockey player.
Yeah, but that's it. He just peaked that year, and good on him, but that's not his game. He's a setup man. He's a big body position guy in front, and he's played very consistently over the course of his career, and I think he deserves a deeper playoff run than he's seen. I mean, a conference finals is quite deep, but he deserves it. He's just one of those guys. He really, really does. All right, so we are into the last leg of Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com, and, of course, OffTheCrossbar.com. Crossbar with a K. We're going to look at some dark horses. Let's look at some teams on the verge. Maybe on the verge, maybe not on the verge, might make the playoffs. Lower half. I don't want any division leaders, and I don't want the 4-5 seeds. 6 and under, who could win a cup? Go.
Well, the Rangers.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, naturally, right? They've got everything together to win a cup. Minnesota. Minnesota really? Minnesota put on a run. They don't have anything extraordinary, but they've just got a lot of solid hockey players in Minnesota. And I think given the chance, you know, if all things come together nicely, Minnesota can put a legitimate chance at it. I don't think they're going to win, you know, but we're talking about dark horses. You've still got Zach Parise, Ryan Suter, Mikko Koivu, Jason Pominville now. I mean, there are a lot of experienced
hockey players
there.
There's a lot of depth
there. Yeah.
There is. There's a lot of depth there.
Goaltending-wise, again, not so bad, right? I mean, not incredible, but not something that you're going to really... Backstrom has been solid all year, right?
He's been good.
20 wins? 20 wins.
He's been good.
His numbers aren't extraordinary, but they're not poor. And he's a solid goaltender. They don't have a lot as far as backup goes. Josh Harding's been hurt, right?
Yeah. Hurt and dealing with ongoing health issues, yeah.
Yeah, but I think you could see some kind of surprise coming out of Minnesota. I think so. Kind of cool to see Phoenix get in. I like Phoenix. I just want Phoenix to succeed, just to, even if it just gives them the momentum and the street cred they need to be sold to go somewhere else.
So you know what? I fall on the exact opposite end of the Phoenix Coyotes spectrum. I wish them the worst of luck. I really hope that without injury, I don't want anybody to get hurt, but other than that, I want terrible things to happen to their organization. You don't deserve it.
It's not the organization's fault. It's the organization's fault. The team is just a victim of circumstance.
You're right, but at some point, you just have to hit the bottom of the barrel. I mean, you got to hit rock bottom before you can begin rehab. And I think the Phoenix Coyotes are due to hit rock bottom. Look, they're a joke. They're literally a joke that's so old it's not even funny to tell anymore. Like there's no legitimacy to the organization. It's league run. It's league operated. They keep sneaking in, and then these 15 people show up with picket signs outside the arena. You know, save our multi-billion-dollar condo complex, shopping mall, family rec area, I think there's a hockey team there or something. Like, this is a finance project gone terribly, terribly wrong. Send them to somewhere where they can find consistency, where they can sign free agents, because they have consistency in front of them, because they will have a future in the city. Give their players and their players' families the dependability, the reliability of knowing where their kids are going to go to school next year. I want bad things to happen to that organization. They're a joke.
So that good things can come of it.
Sure, in the long run. Yeah, absolutely. I don't wish the players bad luck in terms of their careers, but the fact I have a really hard time swallowing the fact that the Phoenix Coyotes exist when there are markets that are starved for hockey, that really want it. They're literally protesting in the streets to bring hockey to their city. And there are places like Phoenix where they are protesting in the streets to get rid of the hockey team because it's a tax drain. It's a joke. It's Uncle Gary's pride is what it is. And it bothers me to no end. But now that I've gone off on that little rampage, let's get back to the teams I think are dark horses for the playoffs.
Okay.
Not the Coyotes. I've got the Rangers as well. For all the reasons that we went through with the potential Rangers versus Penguins matchup. I mean, you talk about goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
Top notch.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I don't know how you goaltend with a suit under your equipment. We've been over that many times. Henrik Lundqvist.
Very well.
Sharp dressed man. The firepower up front. Like I said, you've got the guns. You've got Nash, you've got Richards, you've got guys like Callahan that can find the net. But what I like about the Rangers right now is the organizational depth. The Ryan Clough move was fantastic. The Brassard trade, bringing in so much of the core of, believe it or not, the Columbus Blue Jackets over the course of the last 12 months to improve their hockey club has been genius.
Mm-hmm.
It's been genius.
Who did they bring in this year? Daryl Poe, Roman Hamrlik, John Moore, Ryan Clough, and Derek Brassard.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, those are some acquisitions, all right. I mean, you know, Hamrlik is nothing special offensively, but he's a hell of a solid defenseman. You know?
Talk about a depth move. He's a guy that if Montreal still had in their organization, we would not miss Emelin nearly as much.
No.
And that's invaluable come playoff time. You're talking about a former number one draft pick for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a guy who has been around the league a long time and done a lot of positive things.
A very long time. What was he, like, number one draft pick in 1986? 95. Close enough.
I remember my dad telling me I had to watch this kid, and I was probably 12, and he was like, you got to watch this guy. He's going to be good. And he was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll give him that. So, and again, it's that sandpaper that's back in the Rangers lineup. Mm-hmm. After missing Prust, you get the Klo, you get the Brassard, you get these guys. But I'll tell you the real dark horse. I'll tell you a team that I think this year has 2012 LA Kings written all over them is the St. Louis Blues.
The St. Louis Blues, he says.
You look at these forwards. I mean, not a lot of big names up front. Chris Stewart is leading the team in scoring.
30 points.
But here's a guy who also posts some pins. This is a tough, tough team to play against in Chris Stewart, Perron, Backes, Berglund, Oshie.
Shattenkirk.
Four-checking machine.
Sorry, I just like saying Shattenkirk.
Under a coach who is absolutely phenomenal in Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah.
There is not a better coach in the National Hockey League than Ken Hitchcock. And now you look at a defensive group that now includes Jay Bouwmeester and Jordan Leopold. To add to Norris Trophy perennial contender at this point, we can say, Alex Pietrangelo.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett Jackman is no joke. You've got guys with experience in the lineup. You got your Andy McDonalds. You got your the Roman Polaks, the Patrick Berglund, the guys who have been around long enough that they can be incredibly valuable in the locker room. Plus, you got your mid-career guys, your crashers, your bangers, the guys that have been to the playoffs a number of times with the St. Louis Blues organization, and you've got your young guns up front.
And you got a three-way tie in your goaltending right now.
Yeah, and that's
Jake Allen.
Where I was getting.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, go ahead.
No. This is the most phenomenal part, is you've got two guys who were both in contention for the Vezina last year and the hottest rookie goaltender that we've seen in 5 years.
Yeah.
That ain't bad heading into the playoffs.
No, not at all. And I mean, you know, Jake Allen has the most wins of the three of them. He's got 9 wins to 7-6 for Elliott and Halak, respectively. None of their numbers are really stellar this year. I mean, you've got Halak with the best GA of 2.14. But
you're talking about pedigree with these guys.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing. You know, come playoffs is a brand new start to a season, right? And it just seems, though, especially for a lot of goalies, they can just turn it around. They can turn an .899 save percentage into a .946 save percentage sometimes.
Oh, especially
you know?
For guys who've been playing hurt, like Elliott and Halak have both been doing.
Yeah, and it's great to have a young rookie like Allen in there being able to take the reins and letting them.
Well, how many times have we seen it? You get a kid like this who has portions of his regular season,
mm-hmm.
and he plays relatively well. And yet, he shows these flashes of brilliance. And that's what we saw. Jake Allen had that incredible shutout streak. He had all those wins in a row to get himself started. And now we're in a spot where you don't want to put any pressure on the kid because you don't expect it. And you certainly would expect Halak or Elliott to take the reins. But you can't help but think about Patrick Waugh. You can't help but think about Ken Dryden. You can't help but think about Cam Ward. This is the same kind of situation. You're looking at a kid who has just gotten his ears wet, has just cracked the surface of the National Hockey League, has shown a lot of potential. Shooters have no tape on him.
He's very young, though. He's 23.
Yeah.
And as far as goalies go, yeah.
Yeah, but he's from Fredericton.
I know. Fredericton, New Brunswick.
There
that. Okay, so let's say he's about 28 then.
Well, you've got to
really
give him 5 years of hard living added on to a Maritimer's life,
sure.
No matter what.
Okay. Okay, so yeah.
Al McGinnis was born 40. I mean, that's... Mike McPhee was born with no hairline and a mustache. I mean, it's Maritimers are a different breed. We all know this.
True.
Crosby, well, he's growing up.
grow facial hair for the life of him, though.
Well, maybe now. He's got
maybe
face.
Now. Maybe the puck will have shaken something out of there.
No, there's one thing I can tell you. It's you can see right here under my chin.
Yeah.
Slap shot to the face causing lack of facial hair growth and scar lines. So that's it. You heard it from me here first. Last year, the LA Kings were unstoppable heading into the playoffs. Called it in the preseason. Sometimes. Lost faith. Called it again after
February,
Christmas.
Yep. Yep.
You watch out for the St. Louis Blues. They are a dangerous, dangerous hockey club heading into the playoffs, especially when you look at these standings, which I can't find. There they are. You got them sitting right now against the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep.
That's a team that's primed for the picking. That's a team that's been screaming upset for a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't believe in what they've got going on. We'll see what the addition of Derek Roy does for them. But if they draw St. Louis,
they could be in trouble.
That's the off-the-crossbar fact upset of the first round. I'm calling it right now.
Right.
That, and if the Rangers match up against Pittsburgh, they will also be upset. Guaranteed.
Yeah. Awesome.
Guaranteed.
Playoffs are going to be fun to watch.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad that it's not going to be a condensed playoff schedule. These guys will get killed.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be fair to anybody.
All right, well, I'd like to thank everybody for listening in this week. Join us again next week, every Thursday at 8 o'clock. As always, available for podcast download. But if you're listening to us, chances are you either don't want to download a podcast because you've already listened, or you already have and you know. Either way, thanks for tuning in, and thank you for going off the crossbar. We'll see you next week.
Groovy.